And we are going to call in our friend Jeremy Dixon, our chef, our food specialist here on Faith FM, to talk to us a little bit more about food and cooking, particularly in this Christmassy season. Good morning to you, Jeremy.
Hello. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, too. It's just a couple of days to go now, less than a week.
Yes.
How exciting. 6 days to Christmas Day. So, Jeremy, what's been going on in your household? What have you been preparing? Are you the person that's going to be cooking for your family, or you just sit down to enjoy and relax since you cook pretty much every day of the year anyway?
Yeah, so basically, my family's mostly meat eaters, so we pretty much go to both sides of our family dinners, and so we just bring along one dish. So, yeah, so I go along and eat a dish. I'm not catering for a whole crowd of people.
Okay, all right. So, do you have a choice already, or is it a surprise? Do you know what you're going to be bringing to your?
Not sure I'm doing it. I often quite like doing my not turkey recipe, which is kind of like a mixture of tempeh and tofu and some miso, and you kind of make these nice not turkey balls with a nice kind of cashew gravy. That's kind of my kind of go-to.
Gravy. All right, is it too complicated to share on the radio? But because I would be interested in knowing how to prepare it.
Are you sure? Definitely. So I forgot what cookbook it's in, but basically you get some tofu and some tempeh from the supermarket.
Yeah. Okay.
You grate it up. Put it into a bowl and mix it up. Add some tempeh, add some soy sauce, add some mixed herbs, a little bit of oil, some pre-fried onions.
Okay.
And so you kind of, and they kind of form together into nice kind of patties or nice kind of, nice balls. If you flash, you can kind of put them into kind of a chicken drumstick kind of shape. And then you just put them in the oven, put a bit of light spray of oil on them. And you bake them for, I think, about 30 minutes. And they're just a really lovely, lovely kind of a vegan kind of recipe. And, yeah, a cashew gravy, which is all about cashew nuts, bit of soy sauce, a garlic, salt. I forgot my cashew gravy recipe or something like that. Yeah,
okay.
It goes really well together.
Yeah, that's a bit. So Jeremy, that is fantastic. The question is, so if I crumble, you know, the tofu, the tempeh, you know, will they stick together, or do I need to add anything for it to stick together? Or is it going to be crumbly?
I mean, sometimes if you have them nice and fine, and the tofu kind of, they kind of, they're not super, super hard as a rock or anything, but if you give them a good squeeze, there's a bit of moisture in there, and the tofu kind of bakes kind of together, kind of clings to itself, so it's not too bad.
Okay, very good, very good. What else would you like to share with us, you know, with our radio friend that's, you know, cooking, you know, your way, or something that you think that we should try?
Yes. So I thought I'd just try a few nice, kind of really nice, kind of summer fresh salads with you. Just you can do over the summer season.
Okay.
So I've got one here which is quite interesting, which is a creamy raw broccoli and cranberry salad. And you probably don't enjoy having raw broccoli because it can taste, you know, average. But if you chop it up really, really, really super fine and put an amazing dressing with it, it's actually really nice.
Okay.
So the creamy raw broccoli cranberry salad out of my cookbook 6. So you just have 3 cups of broccoli cut very, very, very small. Half cup of dried cranberries, half cup of red onion. And so that's all of the kind of the salad. And then the dressing is what makes it. So it's an orange dressing where you get 1/4 cup of orange juice, 2 tablespoons of lemon juice, 3 tablespoons of tahini, which is sesame seed paste, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, and 2 cloves of garlic, and whiz those up in the blender. And that's a really nice tahini orange dressing.
Mm.
And you just basically pour that through and throw some sliced almonds and perhaps some coriander on top, and you've got a really nice raw broccoli salad.
Sliced almonds and coriander. I have a question for you. Let me see if I got it right. So you cut the raw broccoli very, very finely. Can I add – I'm a little bit lazy sometimes. Can I just – chuck it into the food processor or to the blender and just kind of chop it there?
Yes, you can.
Is it going
to? Yep, you can. You definitely put it. It won't work in a blender because that's more for liquids. But a food processor, it will go well. You've got to just be really judge. You'll turn it into like mush if you're not careful. So you just do it a little bit.
Okay. And pulse it. A few pulses.
And you start putting small bits in at a time. Don't fill it. If you fill the jug totally, you'll end up with a whole lot of mush on the bottom and big bits on top. So make sure you kind of at least chalk it up so it kind of free flow and you have a nice quick blend without too much complication.
Okay.
Or even better, you'll find that most food processors come with grating and slicing blades. And they can save huge amounts of time. So most people have got their food processor sitting on their bench, and deep down inside the cupboard somewhere, there's a box of tools that came with it that they haven't touched since they bought it. But, yeah, dust off those tools. There's grating blades and slicing blades, and they're very, very handy for processing huge amounts of vegetables at high speed with very little
time. Need to treat that broccoli, like, for example, blanch it, like putting it on hot boiling water for a few moments and then cold water, or just like fresh from the market, just give it a rinse and off you go?
So we just do it fresh as it is, but if you are very anti-broccoli, or you've got people that are, it wouldn't hurt to perhaps give it a quick blanch, but very, very quick. You're talking probably even just pour some boiling water over it for like 2 minutes, just so it's just kind of, not quite so raw.
Oh, yeah, and it gets greener as well. I just find that when you blanch the broccoli, it just gets a flush of color.
Yes, true, yes.
So this salad, how does it look like? Because there's no leaves in that salad. It's more like, what's the texture like? What are we aiming for?
It's just kind of like it's probably almost
like a coleslaw,
but not quite.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, something different. Yeah, good.
Very
good. Very nice.
All right. So I took notes of that one. That's going to be a fun one to try. What else do you have?
Well, one thing I've done for a while, and I just saw in my cookbook this morning, was I really love salsas, and salsas, you can kind of push them in many different directions. Traditionally, they might be just like a tomato salsa or a pineapple salsa.
Okay.
But basically, my definition is, and true chefs may tell me I'm wrong with this, but basically a salsa is like just some really nice, soft, finely chopped vegetables together that taste amazing. And I've got a really nice one in my cookbook, 8, an avocado and grape salsa. So what you do is you get some red and green seedless grapes, and you basically quarter them. Finely diced a chili, finely diced red onion, some finely diced chopped mint, some coriander, and basically mix it up together, pour a little bit of salt, a bit of olive oil, a bit of lime juice, and then after you've kind of mixed that all around, you want to put in a finely diced avocado. And the kind of the sweetness of the grapes, the lovely creaminess of the avocado, the chilies and the coriander and the mint, it just all kind of blends into a really beautiful salsa, and that's awesome. You can have with like just on the side plate as a meal, or you could even chop it really super fine and have it as a dip with corn chips. But I find it's one of my favorite salsas, avocado and grape.
Wow, avocado and grape. That is – have you ever had that, Austin?
Avocados
with grapes in it.
That is the gnarliest thing I've ever heard. I don't know if I could do it. I love grapes. I really like avocado. Avocado and grapes together? I don't know, bro.
Man, you're really stretching our minds here into chattering new territories, Jeremy. I love it. I can get up quite, excited to exploring new flavor territories when I can. So that one would be an interesting one. Grapes and avocados.
Yeah.
Cool. Very good. And I think that this would go really, really well if you were doing something, with like more of a Mexican style, like with beans and so on. But it has that Christmassy touch to it.
Exactly.
With the grapes, right? Very nice. All right. So we talked about, the not turkey bowls, summer fresh salad with very finely chopped broccoli. That's going to be a twist to the coleslaw idea. I think it's going to be very interesting. We talked about the avocado and grapes salsa. What else can we can you give us as a tip for us?
Something I've been making quite a lot lately, and I really enjoy, and it's great for summer. I love making tacos.
Tacos.
And one of my favorite ones that I've got in my cookbook number 7 is it Mexican smoked jackfruit tacos.
Okay.
With lime and cashew aioli. And so you can, you basically buy tacos in the supermarket, and you can get like wheat ones or you can get corn ones. So there's many different types of soft tacos I'm talking about. Although it would also work with the fried tacos as well.
The hard ones, yeah.
But the big thing that makes this is the jackfruit filling. And this is kind of like your pulled pork. And I don't know if your listeners have ever used jackfruit before. But you buy these cans of green young jackfruit. Not to be confused with jackfruit that kind of comes like mango. So you kind of got the ripe jackfruit, which is kind of like a mango, and you buy the can. But the young green jackfruit is what you want. And it's kind of very, very fleshy, like pork or chicken in terms, yes, of the texture. So one can of that. And what you want to do is put it in the fry pan, fry it up with some oil and onion and garlic. And the thing with jackfruit is, while it's kind of young jackfruit and it's green, it's kind of not sweet, but you still have to kind of tell it that it's going to be a savoury dish. So once you've kind of got this all nice, you basically just bash it down. It starts off with kind of like lumps of pineapple, but once it cooks down in kind of a nice, fleshy, mincy kind of a texture. And then you want to really show it's going to be savoury. So what you want to add, some smoked paprika, give it a nice smoky flavour, add some tomato paste, and really kind of give it a really nice smoky kind of tomato-y kind of flavour, bit of maple syrup, bit of salt, bit of water, and you have this really nice flaky kind of a jackfruit kind of a mix. And, so basically just throw that on your tacos. And then just add on your vegetables. You've got, for example, red cabbage, cherry tomatoes, avocado is obviously really important. And I quite often love putting on top a cashew and lime aioli, which is my kind of go-to dressing, which is basically cashew nuts or cashew butter with garlic, lime juice, bit of salt, bit of water, and you kind of just drizzle that on top. A few lime wedges, so a bit of squeeze of lime juice. Bit of fresh coriander, and you've got a really, really nice taco.
So let me just see if I got the cashew lime aioli again. So you add some cashew nuts, lime juice, salt water, and also a little bit of oil, and you blend all together?
No, not oil. So basically you're relying on the cashew nuts to do the work. So basically cashew nuts, garlic, lime juice, or perhaps a bit of maple syrup, salt, and water.
Okay.
So my last couple of cookbooks, I think 6, 7, and 8, have got that recipe in as a kind of a standard dressing.
All right.
Put it in a blender, blend it up, and you've got a really nice creamy dressing. Obviously, when you're making dressings, you need to adjust the texture.
Oh, okay.
So at the end, you might need to add a little bit of water or a bit more cashew butter. And often the dressings will go, when you put them in the fridge, they'll probably last about a week, but when you put them in the fridge, they will generally go thicker over time. So often you want to bring out of the fridge and just put a few drops of water in, or perhaps a tablespoon, and then just mix it around with a spoon just to restore your original texture. You haven't got, chemicals in there like a lot of the mayonnaises have to keep the texture consistent. So when you're dealing with natural products, you don't get that kind of, you need to kind of obviously adjust as you go.
Okay, well, that's lovely. And I'm thinking that the jackfruit, if you do a batch cook, I'm wondering, can you freeze it fairly well? And I think that leads, or is it has to be consumed kind of fresh, or otherwise it goes fairly bad?
I haven't actually frozen that, but I'm 96.5% confident that you'll be fine if you freeze the jackfruit.
Yes. So, and this is the last thing. We have about 1:30 left. And one of the things that I'm concerned about with the Christmas season is like leftovers. Maybe, you know, our friends that are listening to us are going to be cooking lots. There's going to be lots of food. And even after you people take them away to their home, they're still going to have a lot of food left. So what are the rules of, in terms of what you can, you know, just something quick in terms of what can you freeze, what you just put on the freezer, refrigerator, and what you should discard, just as a rule of thumb.
Yeah, sure. So I could probably spend an hour talking to you about food safety, but the 30-second version pretty much looks like keep things as cold as possible. And the big rule they teach you in hospitality is the danger zone is between 4 degrees Celsius and 60 degrees Celsius, so room temperature. So stuff must be kept below 4 degrees or above 60 degrees. If it's not in that danger zone, bacteria will double every 20 minutes.
Wow.
So if you start with one piece of bacteria now, by the end of the day, that bacteria will be something like, I figured it's something like 5 million bits of bacteria. So the more you keep things out on the table, the more warmer it is, the faster that bacteria will multiply, which will make you sick. So the trick is get it in the fridge as quick as you can, or into the freezer, is probably the main thing. And in the fridge, probably most things, you know, a couple of days generally, depending on what it is, that's probably a good starting point.
Very good. Jeremy Dixon, thank you so much. Revive Cookbooks, some of the best recipes, down to earth, easy to make, healthy. You should get their books.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
With Scaffy and Lawson, today is Thursday. If you're listening live, the 19th of December. And we had spoken about massive, gigantic mushrooms. We've spoken about a new Christian just wandering his way through Syria on foot until he gets caught and thrown into the world's worst prison. And just after 7 months, got a get off jail card from God, free.
That's wild.
Yeah, that was wild. And we have still more to cover. We're going to have a Bible study into the open and empty tomb of Jesus and what happened there in John chapter 20 today. So you have to stay tuned. So we also have a quiz question to kickstart this segment for people commuting, people doing their morning activities at this hour after 8 a.m. New South Wales time. And, you know, depending on where you are in the country, a little bit later, or a little bit earlier. So tell us, what is the next quiz question?
So we're doing all Christmassy
theme
today and probably tomorrow too. Which direction did the wise men travel to going to Jerusalem? Which direction did they go towards? Well done in the studio.
Look at us. Geographical. Okay. My pen was like slipping through my fingers trying to get that answer. It was like bouncing between them. It was like a volleyball.
He's all about the speed competition. Yeah. And Scaffy's over here like, casually, putting
that's
in his
right. My
with great confidence.
That's right. My focus is on quality. My focus is on accuracy.
I'm fast and loose, you know. I'm just...
Get it in.
Yeah,
that's right. Get that answer in. Okay. 0491-064-669. The question again was, which direction did the wise men travel to going to Jerusalem? So we want to know the direction they were heading.
Yeah.
All right.
Where did they go towards? Which direction did they go
towards?
That's
right.
All right. That being said, I want to ask you this question.
Mm-hmm.
When you both were at school, Shell and Lawson, did you learn any mnemonic to memorize the direction of the cardinal points?
You know? Never eat soggy Weet-Bix.
Did you learn the Weet-Bix one?
Yeah.
What about you, Shell?
No, I don't remember. Well, it certainly wouldn't have been the Weet-Bix one because we don't have those in America. It's very sad.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I don't remember learning it that direction.
All right. So there's a conspiracy theory.
Mm-hmm.
I was asking who infiltrated the word Weet-Bix?
Oh, okay.
Into the never eat soggy Weet-Bix thing for kids. And some people say, hey, some people say that,
that's the best way sanitary to have them.
Some people said that was the Kellogg Corporation because they were the main competitors of Weet-Bix.
Yeah.
And they say, hey, we don't want you to eat soggy Weet-Bix because Weet-Bix gets soggy and yuck. But then why would you use the word Weet-Bix? Because just by mentioning a word, you're already creating advertisement.
That's right.
So maybe sanitarium somehow got involved into doing this.
Deep.
And that became one of the most effective
sales
advertising tactics of all times. Because, you know, this Weet-Bix just so happens to be the most consumed cereal in Australia.
Yeah. Sky wrote in, she said, I still use the Weet-Bix one to this day. I have no idea even now what direction I'm sitting in. I mean, neither do I. Oh, probably south. I'm facing south, I believe.
I'm totally with Sky on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm the one who's always like getting in trouble saying, oh, when we come up there, my husband's like down.
Yeah.
That's so good. I always get it wrong.
I'm terrible with directions, eh? Like I'm really bad with, for example, I go to the shopping center, like I'll go to like a Westfield, you know, something like that. And I park my car and I walk in and I completely forget where I put it. I just stuff like that. Like I'm just terrible with remembering where stuff is.
I always have to say, okay, I'm walking in the entrance that's by such and such a shop.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
I pick a picture. In a blue zone.
You take a picture.
Yeah, I pick a picture of the markings like G35 or 8F, whatever it is.
Dude, I've had moments of like walking through the car park
I've
of Westfield.
I've had once where I was so lost.
Like for an hour trying to like yeah. going every single floor.
Yeah, I was actually once lost for 2 hours.
Oh, okay.
But I was in Brazil. And I parked my car and I couldn't find it. I actually thought that someone had stolen and everything. The thing is, it was in a different car park altogether. There was like two car parks that joined together and there was just this narrow gateway between the two. And I totally forgot. I actually had to go to security after hours and having them looking at the camera, security cameras to find out where my car was.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was a bit.
Oopsie.
That was an oopsie
moment.
And
then they found it.
That's right. Sky said, I still use Weet-Bix.
We just read that.
Oh, yeah. No, but this is the thing. She asked, do you dip Weet-Bix into a bowl of milk instead? So I want to know, how do you do Weet-Bix?
No, they have to be soggy.
And one of the things.
Oh, no, they do not.
Okay, so let's talk about it. Let's talk about Weet-Bix. Are you a. Number one, I find out that in Australia, there's like a subculture of Weet-Bix. And one of the first questions people ask is like, how many Weet-Bix do you do?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
How many do you shell?
Three.
You're a three Weet-Bix persons?
I'm three.
Yeah, four.
Four?
Yeah.
Yeah. I do two.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not a big Weet-Bix fan. So do you like them soggy or do you like them crunchy? What's the deal?
Crunchy. Like not dry, but as in like, so it's all about speed, okay? Not eating too fast, but basically you lose very little milk. I do. I get the outside of them wet and the inside dry and they're like, it's the best.
Yeah, that's the way to go.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
You have to get in between because if it's soggy, do you like the soggy Weet-Bix?
Shell, do you like soggy Weet-Bix? I'm not into it.
Yeah,
at all.
I mean, I don't want it like fully. I want it to be formed into like a porridgey sort of a substance, I guess, you know. But yeah, I like it the way that you're saying.
So
too,
that's very soggy.
I don't mind it when it's quite when it's been in the bowl longer either.
Our good friend.
But then it definitely needs more.
I like it in between.
Milk.
Our good friend.
I like it in between better.
From the breakfast show, Monica. She uses like, she'll use half a bottle of milk for that thing. Like she'll use so much milk and she'll just fill the bowl up right to the top with milk.
And then she'll throw the milk
away.
And
then, with like four Weet-Bix and literally she'll stir it. So like it gets so soggy. It's not even Weet-Bix anymore. Then she eats the Weet-Bix out of it and then she chucks the milk out. I'm like, what is wrong with you?
She could as well just drink the milk, right?
We love Mon, but habit in particular, stop it.
My husband.
Okay.
He'll make his cereal and he'll go sit on the porch or whatever to have his breakfast. And then I'm making my cereal. And I can't find the milk. The milk is never where it's supposed to be because he has to have the milk with him when he's having his breakfast because he's always adding more milk. And so I have to hunt him down and find the milk.
That's right. I want to know from you, radio friend, how do you like your Weet-Bix? We're getting some messages here already. Suzanne said Weet-Bix has to be eaten within 2 minutes. Like,
real.
This is a scientific thing. Like, 2 minutes, 2 minutes and 1 second is just too soggy.
Yeah.
That's right. So there you go, Suzanne. Thanks for doing the math for us.
I totally agree. Yeah.
Jackie said she likes her Weet-Bix dry with jam.
So it's like Weet-Bix instead
dry
of like toast.
With jam.
I've never
tried that, but
there's a lot of people who can do Weet-Bix as like a biscuit, you know, that you can put something on.
Yeah, because that's the big part of the Weet-Bix is Weet-Bix kit.
I find that too dry.
Too dry. Actually, one day someone told me just to put one entire Weet-Bix in my mouth, and I did. My mouth felt like the desert of Judea.
It just dries the hills of Gilboa.
That's right. Yeah. It just sucked all of the moisture out of my mouth. It was just not a very pleasant experience at all. Wayne said, hey, Weet-Bix, soy milk microwave for 1 minute and honey. There you go. There's some adding of heat here.
We skipped over two comments.
Yeah. Okay. Suzanne, she said, my 19-year-old eats 8 to 10 Weet-Bix.
What?
Yeah. That's awesome.
My husband used to eat 6 when he was
that age. Half a box.
But now he's down to 3.
Well, it depends what size box you get.
Like one of these standard, like, shoe-sized boxes of Weet-Bix.
Yeah. And David just does Used to do seven.
Used to do seven.
I think, yeah, you can, when you're younger and your metabolism is faster, you need more.
Yeah, if you're an athlete.
Stuart likes his Weet-Bix soggy. Mate, you can keep that one, Stuart. He also wrote in, he said, love this conversation. I thought I was having old age forgetfulness. And no, it's happened to me young, okay? I can remember, like, dates and facts and all this kind of stuff, but remembering where I parked my car, I just walk in so occupied with what I want that I just cannot remember. But you know who's asking the real questions is Sky. She says, why is Lyle not making his wife brekkie?
He does every Sunday.
Aww,
every Sunday.
All right. What does he do?
Porridge. My husband makes the best porridge.
All right. But like, okay, so if I'm why is it a better porridge than just like, what is special about
I've
it?
That's the only thing my husband can cook. Okay. The only thing.
And he's the best.
And he's very, very
good. He does with what? Oats?
Yeah.
Just oats?
No.
Just oats?
Okay, tell me, Sean. Give me a little bit more juice here. What, okay.
Oats and salt. But yeah, he does a really salty porridge.
Salty porridge?
Yeah, and it's just the right amount of salt.
It's delicious.
Make. It is. It's really
have you had it, Lawson?
No, I don't know. No, I hate porridge.
But anybody
I'm just
who has.
Speaking for everyone else.
Yeah, it's really, really good.
All right.
Yeah. Sky, okay, no, Lau, you're back in the good books.
This past Sunday, I heard a a crashing noise. And I'm like, what happened? What broke? He's like, oh, it's nothing.
Just
and
then, porridge being cooked.
Yeah. And yeah, he was just making the porridge and I didn't have to do a please porridge or anything. He just made the porridge. It was
nice. All right. So right. All right. All right. What else do we have here? David said, hey, breakfast team, you know, I learned that you are wrapping the show this preparation day Friday tomorrow for the holidays and then live again on Tuesday the 7th of January. So y'all have a wonderful reason for the season and a great beginning into 2025. Thank you very much, David. It's actually great that you mentioned that. We're going to have a selection of our very favorite shows during that time.
Yeah.
So you get to have the best off.
Mm.
The year. You know, a lot of TV stations, they used to do this. I grew up in Brazil. They used to have like the best of the year show. So you're going to have kind of like that, but for the breakfast.
But for the breakfast show.
Breakfast.
So show. I wonder what's going to be on the menu for the best of the year.
I actually want to learn, do you have a favorite breakfast show episode?
Or maybe a favorite story or
a
Bible
story
study,
or a segment
that stands out to you.
Yeah, what were some of the highlights of the breakfast show for you during the year? Is there any story that stuck with you? I always learn to
your
know
favorite
because,
interview.
Yeah,
person.
An interview.
Yeah,
a news story.
What's your favorite bit of the show?
Yeah, let us know because maybe we can play that one.
Yeah,
as a special tribute.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Breakfast Show this morning. Actually, speaking of wrapping things up, last night I had the Christmas party for my other work. So for those who don't know, I've been participating in some other work, and that is I've been working at a motorcycle business. It's like a dealership, and they have a workshop, and I manage the workshop and order parts and do scheduling and whatnot. And we had our Christmas party, and we went go-karting, and I wiped everyone. Like, I just want to say
just recently.
Yeah. Like last night. And I just want to say, like, if anyone wants a challenge, if you think you're a good go-karter, come go-kart with me. I'm like undefeated in the space.
Look,
but
I will eat my humble pie here. I'll say that I'm a terrible go-karter, but I am actually open to learn from you.
Oh, 100, dude, I'll do lessons.
Like, you tell me how to get faster that thing. Cause every time that I jumped in one.
Yeah.
I'm always the slowest.
You're struggling.
Yeah.
But what's actually cool about that? This is actually, that Christmas party and today and tomorrow, this is like my last days working there. I'm wrapping up my career as a motorcycle workshop, motorcycle shop guy, for a very interesting reason.
You're listening to The Breakfast Show. Connect with us on 0491 064 669.
So yeah, I'm wrapping up my work.
Yeah, so what's the
reason? As a motorcycle workshop guy. And it's not because I don't like motorcycles and whatnot. But it's actually because next year I start as a pastor.
Congratulations.
I'm going to be a church pastor. So this
That's
is
very exciting.
Culmination of many years of work and a bit of study and all those kinds of things. And it's brought me to this point now. And honestly, like it's a pretty big step. I'm going into next year, like starting as a church pastor. I'm getting married, like.
It's all happening.
And even like, praise the Lord. Even, man, I don't know, something I want to talk about. I just want to be super real because I've been in some kind of full-time ministry since I was about 18. And the whole time doing that, like I've just loved it. I've just done it for whatever, you know, becoming a pastor is that step. That kind of big career step and, you know, you're kind of locking into your full-time career and whatnot. And I wasn't under the illusion.
Are you going to be with us in the breakfast show?
That's yeah,
everybody wants to know.
I'm staying on the breakfast show.
All right. We're not losing you, Lawson. That's good.
But I think what's been interesting for me is that, like, I got into ministry work and church work just because I felt such a deep impression of, like, Jesus has saved my life. Jesus is like, God has saved me and I want to share that with others. And like, I did a lot of that work for, you know, for volunteer wages, like, you know, getting paid $100 a week, stuff like that and scraping by. And I have so many miracle stories. I'm now coming into a phase of my life where, you know, I'm getting married and wanting to build a family and whatnot. And man, like
that's nice.
I got sent my contract the other day. And it's like, you know, just like, because working as a pastor, it's like a real full-time job. I got sent my contract and read over. I'm not going to get into the details. But when I went through it with my fiancé, and I started tearing up, man. I was like, wow. Like,
wow.
And not because, dude, they're not, like, I'm not getting paid, like, such an incredible, I'm not an NBA player or something. But I think I just That's felt nice. This deep sense of, I gave my heart to Jesus, and I really... You know, during that time, yeah, particularly working special. As a volunteer, and working full time, like my dad's a money man. My dad's like a businessman and he used to laugh at me. He'd be like, Lawson, you give all this time to the church, you know, you give all this time to the work, like, why don't you take some time for yourself? And he'd always be encouraging me, like, cause he could see that, like, and I was just scraping by, but I loved it because this is what God had called me to do. And he would always say stuff like, oh, Lawson, come get your forklift ticket. Like, my dad works as a project manager for, you know, big companies, and he could always get me a start. Like, I'm very privileged and I come from that kind of background that I could have always done that. But I'm like, no, Dad, like, I'm living this life. Like, this is the life that I've chosen. This is the life that God has directed me to. And I always said to my dad, I'm like, Dad, God is going to look after me. Like, God is going to give me everything I need for every season that I'm in. And now getting married and prospectively starting a family in the future and whatnot, I called my dad. And my dad, you know, he's like, oh, Lawson, you know, just make sure you're saving for marriage and make sure you've got to be able to support your significant other. And I called my dad and I was just like, man, like, this is... You know, this is what I'm getting paid next year. This is da 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 da. Like, I have enough money to support a family and everything. And it was just a real testimony to him. And like, I was able to kind of witness to him because my dad's got that feels out responsibility of, you know,
it's a privilege
setting my son up and making my son his own autonomous person. And we've just been through all this stuff in my family and whatnot of what that looks like. But praise the Lord, I've just come into a time in my life where, I've kind of transferred from, I feel like I've gone from being a kid to like now I'm an adult. And I think that reflects in my work as well. You know, working with people, mentoring them, you know, being their pastor and whatnot. I've just been so blessed. I just wanted to share. I just want to get real with you guys because, oh man, I feel emotional right now. Like I could cry just thinking about how blessed I am and how much I've been given, and particularly with you guys as well. Like you both, Scaffy and Shell have been a big part of my history.
We've known you your whole Christian life.
These guys have known me since I was 17, 18 and just like, you know, this kid, becoming Christian and just endeavoring to live my life for the Lord. And man, like, and now I'm seeing the fruits of just God. Like I've always seen the fruits. And this is the thing is the thought then to have towards my previous work, like, oh, Lawson, you did all this work for nothing. And now you're finally getting paid. And that was a part of my thinking. But then I thought about it again. I'm like, no, I didn't work for nothing. I worked for the kingdom. Like every, I, I got to see souls in heaven. And that is worth way more. Like, working for nothing would be if I did all those years and there was no outcome from it. You know,
yeah, that's very beautiful. But I have a
reward in heaven. Like, I have a reward in heaven, and it's, am I working for the reward in heaven? Well, it's like, what is the reward? And the reward is that I get to go to heaven with my friends, man. I get to go to heaven with these people who I ministered to and reached. And hey, now I just get paid a little bit more to do it, and praise the Lord. And that gives me the opportunity to raise a family. And man, I don't know. I just wanted to say this. I've been reflecting on this over the last couple of days. I'm like, God has really blessed my life.
Yeah.
It reminds me of a couple of Bible verses that I think what you're saying here resonates a lot with me. But I'll say that after we listen to what Shell was going to say. Sorry, I interrupted you, Shell.
I was just going to say there's a line, I guess, that says that, you know, if you've fired all your pastors. I think during COVID, this was like one of the thoughts, you know, sort of like if you had to like go bankrupt or whatever, and all the pastors got let go. And then a year and a half later or so, you just rehire back the ones that are still working, you know? Yeah. And I know that Lawson is like one of those guys, because like even when he was thinking that, I'm finally going to get to be a pastor, da da da. And then he had no idea whatsoever what his pay packet was going to be. And he didn't care. He was so excited to finally be in the role, you know? And he's like, oh, I never thought that anything like this could happen, you know?
Yeah. That was so funny.
There's actually going to be a little bit of security in my life now.
Yeah. That's a conversation I had with Shell. Like, I got my contract. I got sent my contract last Friday. I read it on Sunday and I came in on Monday. I'm like, Shell, because she know, you know, and you're a pastor, Scaffy. Shell, your husband Lyle's a pastor. I'm like, you guys knew this? Like, you guys got like paid? Like, and so, man, and not that I haven't been paid previously, but honestly, like, the security that's coming in the wage that I'm going to get is far more than I had before. And I'm not saying the amount of money is far.
Yeah, like, that's right.
I'm not an NBA player.
It's not a great wage in Australian standards, but it's sufficient. And
you can pay your bills, you can take care of yourself on it.
It's
a modest life.
That's right.
It reminds me two things, and I love your discourse, Lawson, in your perspective of things. And I think that they're really reflective of God, kingdom values. And there's two Bible passages that sprang to my mind. One is John chapter 6, verse 27. Jesus says, do not work for the food that perishes, but for the food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give to you. So our motivation to, and this does not apply just to pastors. I think that it should apply to every single Christian, every single disciple of Jesus. That when you're working, why are you working? Mm. Oh, you're not working to make money. You're not working to make dough. You know. Yeah. You're not working to get ahead. If you're a Christian, like, you are working for the so that you can bring forth the food that endures to eternal life.
Mm.
Money, and I think that our contributor Sam, who's our financial advisor, he's an educator. He talks to us every month here on Faith FM. He says this very beautifully. He always quotes this. He said, look, for the Christian, money has three purposes. Mm. One, to provide for your family. Two, to serve the needs of others. And three, to further the cause of God.
Mm.
And when we have that perspective of money, it simplifies it. Mm. And money stops being that all-encompassing idol. And the next verse that I spoke about, because you're right, you know, being a pastor, look, it's great. You have you can pay your bills. You don't need to be depending on anyone for your basic needs, but it's not going to ever make the A list of any business, you know.
It's not working at Goldman Sachs.
It has to keep this way. Otherwise, you want to be working for.
That's right.
It's very rewarding in many other ways.
That's right. And I mean, like you, Scaffy, you were in a high, career role before you decided to go into ministry, you know?
Yes.
And so you know the difference and the sacrifice and all of that sort of thing. Yeah. But I just think that it's a blessing and a privilege to work for the Lord.
Yeah,
it is. You know, and we know that we're going to do that anyway, but to be able to do it as a career is a real beautiful reward.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
This morning we are going to give away the answer to the quiz question, get the last quiz question of today's show. So, Shell, what do you have for us?
So, our answer was westward, or they came from the east, they were going to the west. So, if you said west, you got it right. So, fill in the blank is our next question. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the blank, blank, blank. Well done. We have correct answers coming in. At least I'm assuming we do have correct answers. 0491-064-669. I'll read that one more time. For unto us a son is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the blank, blank, blank. Fill in those last three words for us from that passage, and you will get this quiz correct.
Mm. Yes, and shout out to those who have been playing the quiz game with us, Valme and
Janelle.
Vernon.
Very good, very good.
Liz.
Yeah, there's several more in here. But boy, we got a lot of texts to read through to see them all today.
We asked what was your favorite moment this year in the Breakfast Show. And Sky sent Lawson singing Haystacks. I don't think it's – probably that's not this year. Yeah. But it was like of all times.
Yeah.
Like
a, I never heard his
Haystacks song, Lawson. What is that all about?
Oh, dude. It's just like – I just – when I was about – I think I would have been
– when you were at Arise for Life,
yeah,
wasn't it?
No, it was late. Arise Express. I was about 20. Express. I'm like 26 now. So this is like developed over time. But yeah, I was 20 and I wrote this song about haystacks. Now, for those who don't know, haystacks is basically a nacho salad. So it's a salad. It's like chips,
yeah, it's a
beans,
bowl,
and then like,
much,
yeah, and then salad
a bit
on top.
More fresh stuff.
That's right. And I wrote this song about how much I loved it and how to make it and how awesome it
is. Can you give us a little preview?
Friends.
Hey, I know my son helped just a smidge.
He wrote like half of one
like
of the verses.
Something about the beetroot and definitely the Fritos part.
Oh, yeah, the Fritos and Doritos and all this kind of stuff. So shout out Harley. But basically, yeah, it's actually a rap. The verses are like a hip hop thing. Like probably, one of my favorite parts of the song, it goes like, remember the Sabbath to keep it holy, eat haystacks with guacamole, like this kind of stuff. So it's just like a lot of haystack puns.
That is fun.
And it's kind of revolves around church. It's like eating haystacks at
church.
Great.
With your friends. Experience.
And I've heard that there's a chorus of people that are requesting that this song be played and sang by you at your wedding.
At my wedding.
Wait, is it going to happen?
No way. No way. Way on earth. I'm like, guys,
I'm a hater on that idea too.
Yeah. Like, come on, guys. Like, because I'm a little bit known for, I'm a bit of a meme in that sense. Like, people know this song, and particularly before I go to big camp or summer camp or whatever, like, the requests come out, I'll also do the song. But nah, I'm good.
You should have sang that song in the Amplify meetings. That would be fun. Yeah, it would have been.
You're going to do a professional recording of it. We want it on iTunes.
All right. Sherry said, Merry Christmas to you all. Merry Christmas to you back, Sherry. My favorite part all year, Lawson slowly dropping hints, starting at the new year, about having a girlfriend, and then going from there. Congratulations, Lawson, on all your achievements.
Oh, thanks, Sherry. Yeah.
She must not listen to, the episode where Danny was on, because it escalated things very quickly.
Yeah.
It wasn't a slow little hint there. drop that bomb.
This is like in January. It's like, and he's like, because I think at that time, you know, just keeping everything relatively private between us as well. Like, we were official, but in terms of me coming home, on and being like, Shanna, my girlfriend. Like, it was just,
he was
pretty
so
private.
Close to giving her name away.
But Danny was just like full on. I'm like, stop, bro. It's like, I think I'd mentioned up until that point, I think I'd said someone about like, oh yeah, you know, I went on a date or something like that. And then he's like, oh, Lawson's beloved.
And we're like, Lawson and I are both like, no, stop. Can't say yes.
But I mean, you know, then I think, and this is me really like respecting her privacy. But then after a while, she's like, yeah, I don't care. Just talk about it. And then, you know, boyfriend and girlfriend. Sure. And then now, And I think that's fair enough. Like, you know, you give it a bit of space. Some people like,
and it becomes more solid as well.
That's, yeah.
With the time.
If you're just like shouting it from the mountaintops, like, especially when you've just started a boyfriend and girlfriend romantic.
That's right. You never really know.
That's scary, man.
It is scary. Yeah. That's good. All right. Well, yeah. Fantastic.
Hey, but now we're getting married. So praise the Lord. Yeah.
Well, lots of answers coming in for our quiz. Diane Balmain. And Stuart, Simon, well done, everybody. Let's get into a Bible study.
Yeah, Bible study today. So John chapter 20, verse 1. Now on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb early while it was still dark and saw that the stone had been taken away from the tomb.
Mm-hmm.
Then she ran and came to Simon Peter and to the other disciple, whom Jesus loved, and said to them, "They have taken away the Lord out of the tomb, and we don't not know where they have laid him." Now, first started, it's interesting the time marker here. It was the first day of the week, aka the Sunday, that they went to the tomb. What do you think that they were going to do at the tomb, Lawson? And why waiting until the first day of the week and not do it on the seventh day of the week, just on the Sabbath prior to that?
Yeah, good question. I think it's regarding the fact that they didn't want to go there on Sabbath at all, adhering to rest, the standard of rest that had been set. And like even a big point that they make while Jesus is being crucified is like, hey, can you get that guy off? Make sure you get that guy off the cross, you know, during Sabbath before Sabbath, but he had died anyway.
Right at the sunset.
And they put him in the tomb. And yeah, I think there was just a important point of allowing the Sabbath to play out, resting, you know, enabling the Sabbath to happen to them.
Yeah.
And then
it's just quite interesting because I find that if they wanted to break, so to quote unquote, break the Sabbath here in that occasion, they would have ample opportunity. Look, man, it's Jesus. It's to honor his body. But they left all the things undone. And this is, I think, one of the principles of the Sabbath. Like things that can be done the following day so that resting and worshiping can take precedence. Let's do that, you know?
Yeah.
Leave it to the other day. Jesus was dead already, unfortunately. And he said, look, we need to anoint their body. They actually left some things undone in the rituals regarding how to treat the bodies of the deceased.
Yeah.
And they respected the Sabbath. And that story was told many decades later. And John still remembers how every disciple of Jesus, everybody that walked with Jesus, Jesus never taught them to transgress or to trample over the Sabbath.
Yeah.
So it's just a small little reminder. Yeah,
John could have wrote, I think this is really important, like when you see the disciples' reflections on Sabbath keeping, like John could have wrote like, oh yeah, like Mary and Magdalene, they had respect for this, you know, Jewish law of the Sabbath. Again, John writing this decades and decades later. That's right.
The Sabbath hasn't been abolished yet or something,
you know,
like that.
Yeah, up until the Lord had abolished the Sabbath and, you know, we started to keep Sunday and da da da. But he doesn't say that. Like, he gives reverence and respect to the Sabbath. And you see the exact same thing in the writings of Luke, which is even more surprising than John. At least John's a Jew. Luke, on the other hand, is a Gentile. Yet he's, like, reverencing the Sabbath. He's in his writings talking about the gospel accounts. But then also, you know, you see him describing the events of Acts, like Paul and Silas, when they, Acts chapter 16, when they go to Philippi, a non-Jewish city with no synagogue.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, on the Sabbath day, what were they doing? They were making prayers and worshiping God. Like,
that's right. And look, I would even say this, you know, it's not so much that they were reverencing the Sabbath, but by respecting the Sabbath, they're reverencing God.
Yeah.
Because this is a day, it's the Lord's day. It's he that instituted. So we don't keep the Sabbath for the Sabbath.
Yeah.
We don't make the Sabbath like a God.
Yeah.
The Sabbath is a means to an end. It's a means to worship the Creator and respecting the boundaries that he has established for us.
And that's what Jesus says himself. Yeah, the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath.
That's right. Yeah. Sabbath was meant for man because the greatest need of man is what? Is God.
It's God.
So Sabbath is the day where we can focus in our relationship with God. Mm. Otherwise, you know, life ends up becoming all about work, 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 and we have not been created for that. We have not been created to be working machines. We have been created with dignity to be sons and daughters of the Most High God, and the Sabbath celebrates that dignity and that purpose for which we have been created. Mm. So let's keep going here. So apparently, so, you know, side point noted. The point is they went there to prepare the body of Jesus and they didn't find. And she was worried. She went to run to talk to the disciples, John and Peter, and they realized, hey, Jesus' body's gone. Let's see what happened after that. Verse 3.
Yeah. In verse 3, it says, Peter therefore went out and the other disciple and were going to the tomb. So they both ran together, and the other disciple outran Peter and came to the tomb first.
That's a fun story.
Yeah.
John's saying, look, I'm just going to put it there that I ran.
I beat
Peter in the race.
That's so good. Continues on, and he, stooping down, looking in, saw the linen clothes lying there. Yet he did not go in. Then Simon Peter came following him and went into the tomb and saw the linen clothes lying there and the handkerchief that had been around his head, not lying with the linen clothes, but folded together in a place itself.
That's right. It's very interesting that if it was supposed to be a tomb robber or something like that, number one, tomb raiders, they never raided bodies.
Yeah. They took the stuff.
But objects, yeah. Stuff. But the second thing is nobody raids something and then go to all the pains to actually fold all the clothes. Say, hey, you know, let's just keep the place tidy.
Mm.
It's not, you know, when a robber enters your home, the last thing that they want to do is to organize your underwear drawer for you.
Mm.
It's not going to happen. And it's interesting here that who folded Jesus' clothes. And I love this application. I think that Jesus himself. And you know what? Because God is a God of order. It's part of his character. You know, when he created our bodies, we look at the order that it's in our bodies. You know, our hearts, they are always going to be in the same place. Our veins are all in the same place. You know, they're not, you know, the vein that's supposed to go to the brain, it's not going to the arm. It's because God is a God of order. Order is something beautiful. Order and beauty are actually, they're quite related elements as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is why
I just gave that example.
Something that's really appreciated in form and whatnot is like symmetry and that kind
harmony.
Of
harmony.
Yeah, harmony. Yeah. Like because it is appealing to us to see a level of order. There is then something uncanny, you know, there's like brutalist design and whatnot where it's like it's so ordered but yet overbearing. It's interesting. But ultimately here, all the stuff's in order. They find it there.
That's right.
The tomb is open. They're utterly shocked. They just don't, they're trying to compute what they see before them.
That's right. And then the other disciple who came to the tomb first, this is a reference to John, went in also and he saw and believed. For as yet they did not know the scripture that he must rise again from the dead. Then the disciples went away again to their own homes.
Mm.
So he saw and he believed. And they realized, they're starting to realize that the scripture said that the Son of Man needed to get raised back to life after 3 days.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
That was Manuel Escorcio, Adorar al Niño, here on Faith FM, or Adore the Child, Spanish and English version.
Yeah.
It was a great song. Fantastic. I've never heard it before.
Bang it.
It's really cool.
Love it.
The carol you hadn't heard before, or that version?
That version.
Okay.
Yeah, that version.
Yep.
Very good. We are coming to the end of our show. Let's give away the answer to the quiz question. And Chella has something quite interesting to share about the folded napkin.
Yeah.
All right. The answer to the quiz first is Prince of Peace. So, Wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace, and everybody got that one correct. It is sung about a lot at this time of year. So, well done, everybody, for playing along today.
Prince of Peace.
It has been a fun
peace.
Quiz.
I love it. Actually, one of my favorite paintings of Jesus, of Jesus' face, and the story that relates to that is actually called The Prince of Peace, by an artist, a girl called Akiane Kramarik. Have you heard about her story before?
No, I'm looking this up right now.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. She's really, really, really gifted artist. Very good. So thanks for playing with us. So Shel, what was the interesting thing that you noticed that you want to talk about?
All right. So this is coming from a Methodist pastor Tim McConnell, and he says this: in order to understand the significance of the folded napkin, we need to understand a little bit about Hebrew tradition of the day. The folded napkin had to do with the master and servant. Every Jewish boy knew this tradition. When the servant set the dinner table for the master, he made sure that it was exactly the way the master wanted it. The table was finished perfectly, and then the servant would wait just out of sight until the master had finished eating. The servant would not dare touch the table until the master was finished. Now, if the master was finished eating, he would rise from the table, wipe his fingers and his mouth, clean his beard, and wad up the napkin and toss it on the table. The servant would then know to clear the table. But if the master got up from the table, folded his napkin, and laid it beside the plate, the servant would not dare touch the table because the folded napkin meant, "I'm coming back."
Wow.
Very nice.
Deep. Okay. So we're applying that here. We're saying he would have folded it in a way that...
It's interesting that John, you know, what I love about it is that John said that he believed when he saw it, he believed that Jesus had resurrected. It's implied. Jesus had told him plainly that he was going to die, but it was important that he was going to be, you know, dead for 3 days and then he's going to rise up again. Jesus told him plainly. So I think he remembered Jesus's words. And then after that, he really got into the actual scriptures. Like, wow, it's not that just Jesus said that. The scriptures told that many years before.
I do think that it is significant because I always wondered why he only just folded the one cloth, Jesus being, you know, the kind of person who would leave the place better than what you came. You know, why did he just fold that one cloth rather than the others?
I think that all of them were folded.
No,
the only thing is that the cloth was just set aside.
No, it says the others were laying there and this one was folded.
Yeah, we're laying, but not necessarily laying and folded. I don't know.
Yeah,
I have the impression
this
that all
is the
of
only
them
one
were
that says it's folded.
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah,
we have here. Message here from Simon. He said, "Hey, breakfast team, a favorite were the quizzes and the challenging discussions during the year. Yeah, thanks for that, Simon. Simon also asked us a question. Hey guys, how do you fit the 3 days and three nights in the earth, the sign of Jonah from the Messiah from Friday crucifixion? Simon, this is a way that the culturally the Jews, they counted the time. They included both ends. So for example, you had Friday evening when Jesus was, before the Sabbath, when Jesus was crucified and laid in the tomb. That's one day. Then Saturday, or the Sabbath, was the second day. The Sunday is the third day. This is how they encounter. So they're not thinking in terms of 72 hours or, you know, how many complete days. They're just including the amount of weekdays that were part of that.
Yeah.
Event. So 3 days, because it was, you know, the whole death and resurrection crucified with Jesus included 3 days, Friday, Saturday,
yeah.
Friday, Sunday. So they used to do that. You find that in other places in the Bible as well. For example, how they're counting the years of the kings, they also included the years.
Yeah. Yeah. Of their beginning and end.
That's like, right.
Yeah. Not the whole years. Yeah, very interesting, guys. Hey, thank you so much for joining us on The Breakfast Show this morning. Remember to talk faith, live faith, and act faith, and you'll grow strong in Jesus Christ.
See you tomorrow.
God be with you till we meet again. God be with you till we meet again.
Thanks for being a part of the Faith FM family. Join our community on Facebook or get in touch at 1-800-FAITH-FM.